It's really a great, great zchut to be at Pardes. And you know, there's this phrase in this week's Parsha when Moshe sees the snare, he says, Asura na ve'er'e, which I'd like to translate, let me step to the side or let me step back in order to see. And one of the great commentaries, the Kli Yakar, asks, well, if he wants to see, why doesn't he try to get closer? And sometimes the best way to see is to step back, to go to what's called in leadership to go to the balcony. Go to the balcony means that if you're on the dance floor and someone asks you how things are going, you may say, well, it's crowded and people are stepping on each other's toes. Now go to the balcony and look at the same scene. And you may say, you know, the dance floor looks pretty sparse and people are quite graceful. Sometimes you could be learning in an institution and you're so close to it that you're not at the balcony. And I know and I pray that you realize that you are studying in one of the great, in my opinion, one of the great, great institutions of Torah in the world today. I have the greatest respect for Pardes, for your Rosh Yeshiva, for Rabbi Landis, for David, for your entire staff. This is an extraordinary place. And I don't say this everywhere I speak. I say it here. It's something I believe very, very, very deeply. You're very, very fortunate. And I feel fortunate this afternoon to have the great, great zchut, the great honor to share a few words with you in the Bet Midrash. It's a great, great honor. And you hear so many magnificent shiurim from so many Talmidei Chachamim that I've decided I'd like to talk a little bit about Jewish leadership from a particular perspective, spiritual leadership. It's hard for me to talk about leadership and about activism. David mentioned the Soviet Jewry movement without beginning with a nigun. The nigun is the gateway to the soul. I think it's the gateway to the mind. So let's join together. Leman nachai v'rei, leman nachai v'rei, adabrana, adabrana. Shalom Bach Leman Bet Adonai Eloheinu Abba Shatov Lach Didi Rai 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 Rai. Because of my brothers and friends, because of my sisters and friends, please let me sing, please let me say, peace to you. This is the house of the Lord, I wish the best for you. Da 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 da. So what I'd like to talk about this morning in the few moments that we have, and hopefully we'll have a chance for give and take. What's our time? Okay. There's no clock for me to look at. Anybody have a watch? If I were to ask that question in the Bet Knesset, people would laugh like, Rav Avi, does it really make a difference? But I know it does make a difference here. If I were to be asked about leadership, I think my approach by necessity would not be the kind of leadership talk that one could hear at Harvard University, where I understand you can actually receive a PhD in leadership. I think there's a whole school in leadership. And it's a very, very important school. And whatever you could do to learn about leadership, I think it's important. I never attended any of those courses. I never formally studied leadership. So what I'm sharing with you, truly in a humble way, not having studied it, is what I've culled over the years. And I want to share this with you from a conceptual perspective. And I know that in this space, there are people who are committed to going into spiritual leadership. There are others who are learning to learn and are going to be going into their profession. May you all be blessed. But Am Yisrael is so desperately in need of leaders. And so here are four pillars that I consider to be very, very important in leadership. When a student comes to me and asks, is Yeshivat Chovevei Torah or Yeshivat Maharat, and maybe the same would be true about Pardes, and although there's a complementary relationship between the institutions, their missions are slightly different, even though there is a tremendous overlapping. But if somebody were to ask me, is spiritual leadership for me? Is Jewish spiritual leadership for me? Before even asking the question, how's your learning? Can you open up a Tanakh? Can you open up a Gemara and make it out? Before asking that question, I would say that you need a couple of loves. Before you can become a leader, you need a couple of loves. And the most important love that you need is you have to love the people that you are leading. I love Torah. You need Avata Torah. I love Medinat Israel. You have to love Israel. But the most important love that you need to be a Jewish leader is you have to love the Jewish people. Now, that doesn't mean that one should not love humankind. Every Friday night, we quote the Tehillim about our love of Mishpachot Amim. There has to be a strong universal sense of social justice. And I know out of Pardes and out of our yeshivot, there have been students who have gone on to do such unbelievably important things. But from my perspective, a strong sense of national identity, of national consciousness, does not contradict our universal responsibilities, but they are, in fact, a prerequisite to it. A sense of national identity should not block my social justice responsibility, but really it's the pathway to universally care for the world. And none other than Natan Sharansky made this point so magnificently. You know, Sharansky is very well known, but in the beginning of the saga of Sharansky, he was not supported by the Israeli government. It's not well known. I've just finished a book on the movement called Open Up the Iron Door. It's memoirs of a rabbi activist. And I write that in the beginning of the Sharansky years, this great prisoner of conscience, prisoner of Zion, was not supported. And he was not supported because he was part of the Sakharov Helsinki Watch. He was the spokesperson. And the Israeli government felt that they wanted to focus only on those who were purely and only Zionistically inclined, not those who had a broader dimension. And of course, I think the government learned from that mistake that you can be a powerful Zionist. He is who he is today, the head of the Jewish Agency, one of the great, great people of our time. And yet he's a person who universally cares. Look at the way he frames it. This is beautiful prose, which for me is almost poetry. He writes, "Far from being the hostile enemy of democracy, identity is in fact necessary to sustain it." When he talks about democracy, he's talking about universality. when he talks about identity, he's talking about Jewishness. Maintaining healthy societies and securing a peaceful world necessitates that identity be framed by democracy, and that democracy be anchored by identity. As I read it to you, I've read this many times, I get the chills. I just find it, the phraseology, to be so beautiful. Identity without democracy can become fundamentalist and totalitarian. Ulchshani latzmi, if I'm only for myself, in Pirkei Avot, ma'ani, what am I? Democracy without identity can become superficial and meaningless. Im eina nili nili. If I love the whole world, sometimes it's easier to love the whole world than it is to love someone. Because when you love everyone, you really don't have to love anyone. The test of the way you love everyone is the way you love someone. If either aspect is endangered, we are all endangered. When both are strengthened, we can help secure a more peaceful and meaningful world. Now, when I say Avat Yisrael, loving of the Jewish people, loving of the people you're leading, believe me, Dr. Martin Luther King, when he so deeply and powerfully led his black brothers and sisters in the freedom movement, believe me, he had a great, great love for all people, but he had a special love for black brothers and sisters who were really denied fundamental rights. When I speak about love of Israel, the pathway to loving all of humankind, I mean loving all of Israel, not just a piece of Israel. That means the political right should be loving the political left, and vice versa. And it means that if I'm an Orthodox rabbi, I should be a rabbi for all Jews. And there should be this sense of interconnection of souls. You know, we're moving from Sefer Bereshit to Sefer Shmot, and there's the classic question of Mefarshim, why do we need a Sefer Bereshit? If the Torah is about the Jewish people, Am Yisrael, the story of Am Yisrael, the Halachot of Am Yisrael, let's start with Sefer Shmot. My take of it is the following, that Bereshit is about family. It's about families that are broken down. And by the end of Bereshit, the families for the first time come together and all stand around Yaakov's bed and receive a bracha. And it's only when the family is together that Bereshit ends and Shmot, the story of nation, begins. Because I believe that that teaches us that the best model of nation is family. I'm not saying that the nation is my inner family, but the model of nation is family. I have three children. Two are married. That means we have five children. And whatever my children do, whatever path they follow, I love them. I love them. And so too, this is something that I try to live by in terms of Am Yisrael. Every time I see the phrase nation of Israel, I substitute for the word nation, family. The nation is my family. It's a very different model. Because if nation is my family, then my investment, my responsibility as part of the family is greater. And if nation is family, then the borders surrounding the nation, the people of the nation, is very different. I view my community that I have had the honor to spiritually lead over the years. We call our synagogue the bayit, the house, the home. I don't view it as a community. It's a family. It's loving all of Am Yisrael. You know who taught me that? The great Rav Yehuda Amital. I was a political right winger who was so far to the right, and I thought anybody to the left doesn't appreciate the love of Eretz Yisrael. I met Rav Amital, and you know what he taught me? You can be on the left and be prepared to give away land, and guess what? You can love every inch of Eretz Yisrael as much as the most far right wing politician. And the left has to understand they have no monopoly on wanting peace. And the Orthodox rabbi has to understand, I as an Orthodox rabbi have so much to learn from my heterodox, from my conservative and reform and reconstructionist colleagues, and vice versa. It's a great, great challenge that I take very, very seriously. loving Am Yisrael doesn't just mean loving a piece of Am Yisrael. It's loving all of Am Yisrael. And love means not just loving with the head, with the mind, with the heart, and with the soul, but it also means translating that love into action. The word for love is ahava, and ahava is associated with the word hav, which means to give. Rabbi Dessler writes that the cornerstone of love is the readiness to give to the other. He even argues it's not that I love you and therefore I give to you, but I first give to you, and the more I give to you, the more I love you. Although as I've gotten older, I've come to understand that love is also knowing how to receive. There's an art to knowing how to receive. But fundamentally, I think love is knowing how to give. It's translating the love into an action. One of my favorite stories, when my father, may he be well, he's nearing the age of 96, living here in Yerushalayim, and my mother, who died many years ago, they lived in Atanya, and it was my holy task, whenever they came to New York, to pick them up at the airport. It's one of my favorite Abba stories. We all have Abba father stories. He calls me up one morning. He says to me, "Listen, Avi, we changed our schedule. We're not coming in Thursday morning. We're coming in Wednesday morning. Can you please pick us up at the airport?" I say, "Abba, you know how much I love you. It's a little bit difficult. My schedule, it's tough." My father says, "Avi, you know, Mommy's not feeling very, very well. It's tough for us to grab a cab. Would you mind? It's just 24 hours. Pick me up on Wednesday morning." I say, "Abba, you know how much I love you. You know how much I love Ima. It's just a little bit difficult." My father then says to me, "Avrami," now he's not calling me Avi anymore. This is serious business. "Avrami," he meant this well. He said, "You become a hotshot rabbi. You can't pick up your parents at the airport." I said, "Abba, you know how much I love you. You know how much I love Mommy." And then my father said to me these words, "You may forget everything that I'm going to tell you, but do me a favor. What I'm about ready to tell your parents. You may not get it. Your parents will get it." My father says to me, "Avi, Avrami, don't love me so much. Just pick me up at the airport." It's a great, great line. Don't love me so much, just pick me up at the airport. That's the first pillar. The first pillar is Avat Yisrael. I bless you, ask you to bless me that we should have this love. And it's an unconditional, unconditional love. When you're in a family, the blood relationship, I don't even have to respect you in order to love you. I respect my children deeply, deeply. But even if I didn't respect them, I still love them. Second pillar. Second pillar is belief in self. Belief in self. You know, I've had the great, great honor to stay young. I've reached my 70th birthday now, but I have the great honor of trying to stay young. And one of the ways I stay young is I interact with young people who are constantly teaching me the world. I think Eleanor Roosevelt once said that. You stay young by interacting with young people. What I have found is that there are so many people, and this is true intergenerationally, but I think it's especially true with young people, who deep down don't believe in themselves. Maybe we walk about with a certain bravado, what's called masks and screens, but when we take off the masks, we really don't believe in themselves. And my second principle of leadership is for everyone to recognize that everyone has something unique to offer. There is good reason for one to believe in oneself. The most important concept in Torah for me is Ben Azai's concept in the Yerushalmi and the Darim, Ele Todot Adam, that every human being is created in the image of God. That means when I look at you and you look at me, on the surface, what we see is the beauty of God's creation, the tri-partnership creation of the human being. Is there anything, any being, anything in the world that's more beautiful? But if we look deeply into each other, we should be able to see the image of God. When I look at you and look at you deeply, you look at me, we should be able to see a little bit of God. every human being has a little bit of God. You know, at Marriage Encounter, my wife and I attended years ago, we found out in discussion that most people have difficulty loving the other because they really don't love themselves. It says, "V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha," which means that before you can love another, you have to have a love of self. And one of the mottos of Marriage Encounter was, God doesn't make junk. God doesn't make junk. Every human being is created in the image of God. Every human being has a little bit of God in them. And just as there is only one God, so too in every human being is a special oneness that no one else has. We live in a world of replication and imitation. What this is saying is, no two people have the same DNAs. No two people have the same fingerprints. No two people have the same soul prints. Everyone has something unique, very special to offer. I find it in the writings of Rav Kook. If you take a look at number two, I love this piece. This is Rav Kook talking about tshuva. And this is what Rav Kook says. While Maimonidean tshuva is you've done a particular wrong and you want to right that wrong, Rav Kook writes, number two, a person does not conjure up the memory of a past sin or sins, but in a general way, he or she feels terribly depressed. That's what it's about. It's about waking up in the morning and not believing in oneself, feeling a despondency, feeling a lack of value, a lack of worth. He or she feels himself or herself pervaded by sin, that the divine light does not shine on him or her. You feel that you're just not doing it, that there is nothing noble in her or him, that his heart or her heart is unfeeling. And I love the next paragraph. Hatshuva harashit, the primary role of penitence, I would like to read it today, Hatshuva, that the main answer to life is Shehi mi'ira et hamachshakim, which at once sheds light on the darkened zones, miyad, hi sheyashuv ha'adam el atzmo el shoresh nishmato, is for the person to return to oneself, to the root of his soul, umiyad yashuv el ha'elohim, and from there return to God. That's the key. The key is to return to the inner self. Spirituality is not the movement up, it's the movement in. It's not transcendence beyond in the heavens, it's transcendence inwardly. Every single person in this space, the challenge is to return to our inner selves and come to believe in ourselves. You know, the most humble person I ever met in my life was Rabbi Soloveitchik. And I used to hear Rabbi Soloveitchik say over and over, maybe Danny, you heard him say this, I know every word of the Rambam by heart. That doesn't sound very humble to me. He would say, I know every word of the Rambam by heart. Humility doesn't mean that I am unaware of my strengths. Humility means I am aware of my strengths, but I recognize that those strengths come from God. And precisely because they come from God, I'm humble about it. It's really not mine. They belong to God. Therefore, I don't have to be honored. I don't need the accolades. They're blessings from God. And if whatever I have is a covenantal partnership, it's my effort, but it's in partnership with God. If bottom line, it comes from God, it's a blessing from God, with every blessing comes a responsibility. So if I tap into my soul and I find out that I can sing, which I can't, but if I could, what an awesome blessing. And with that blessing comes a responsibility to use my voice, to use one's mind, whatever one's given talents, to one's fullest extent. That too is necessary in leadership. Leadership is to believe humbly in self. There's a great story that's making the rounds, written by Rabbi Joseph Tolushkin, in his wonderful, wonderful book on the Rebbe, on the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the story goes something like this as I remember it. Apparently, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, who went on to become the head of the Orthodox Union, when he was 30 years old, he was a young phenom. He got his PhD in child psychology. He was teaching psychology. He was teaching a high-level Gemara class. And I think he was teaching in a public school system. And he was also facing certain faith challenges. And so he decided to call the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And in those days, you can call the Lubavitcher Rebbe directly. Often the Rebbe wouldn't answer. The secretary would answer. So the secretary answers. He introduces himself that he's got a question to ask the Rebbe. And apparently, as the story goes, the Rebbe was nearby. And this secretary, for some reason the Rebbe's not getting on the phone, is relaying what Rabbi Weinreb is saying to the Rebbe. He says to the Rebbe, there's a young man who says that he has all kinds of issues. He's looking for direction. He needs your help. The Rebbe says to the secretary, ask the young man his name. And so Rabbi Weinreb says to himself, I feel a little bit queasy about saying my name. So he says to the secretary, please tell the Rebbe that it's a Jew, a young Jew calling from Baltimore. So the secretary very dutifully says to the Rebbe, it's a young Jew calling from Baltimore. To which the Rebbe said, a young Jew calling from Baltimore who has all kinds of issues, tell this young Jew that I've heard that there's a great young man in Baltimore who's very wise and very smart, and his name is Weinreb. Go to Weinreb, and Weinreb will give you direction. So Rabbi Weinreb is astounded. He's astonished. He says, but I'm Weinreb. I'm Weinreb. So the secretary says to the Rebbe, it's Weinreb who's on the phone. And the Rebbe responds, and as Joe has it in his book, and the Rebbe says, Oy bazoi, which is Yiddish for, if this is the case, then he should know that sometimes a person needs to speak to himself. Shh. That's worth the price of admission. Oy bazoi, then he should know that sometimes a person needs to speak to himself. Belief in self. The third pillar is a very, very important pillar. When I wrote a book on spiritual activism, the first principle of spiritual activism that I wrote was the following. The test of a real activist is you're doing what is not necessarily the popular thing, but you're doing the right thing. I want to repeat that. The real activist is the one who doesn't necessarily do the popular thing, but you do rather the right thing. And the truth of the matter is when you stand up for that which is right, it is so often unpopular. Think about the great movements in history. Most of them started as very unpopular movements. And most of them did not start in the mainstream. They started on the fringe. Because if you're in the mainstream, there's a certain bureaucracy, a certain red tape that weighs down on such a level that you're really not free and creative enough to think on your own of the new, novel, ingenious, creative ideas. We're all children of Sarah and Avraham. That was a pretty lonely movement. He introduces monotheism into the world. The Midrash says that Avraham is called Ha'ivri. Says the Midrash, the whole world was on one Aver, one side of the river, and Avraham and Sarah alone were on the other side. It was a lonely, lonely movement. But stood up for it, even though it wasn't popular, because they thought it was right. Or think about this week's Parsha. I love this Parsha. This is the Soviet Jewry Parsha, where Moshe and Aaron stand before Paro and they say, Shalach et ami, let my people go. And I love the Pasuk in Perekei. It's in the beginning of the Pasuk. Take a look at it. It says, V'achar, and afterwards, Ba'u Moshe v'Aaron. Moshe and Aaron come before Paro. Says the Midrash, wait a minute. Moshe and Aaron were just sent by God to gather up all the Jews, all the elders, and come before Paro. And the elders agree. So how come it says, and after Moshe and Aaron came before Paro, where are the elders? And the Midrash describes, I relate to this very much, that as they were walking to the palace, they were walking in the thousands. But as they were walking one by one, nishmitu echad echad, one by one, people started to vanish. Until suddenly you get to the palace, you get to the Soviet mission, you turn around, you say, holy bleep, we're the only ones here. We're the only ones here. V'achar ba'u Moshe v'Aaron. It was a lonely movement. You think the Soviet Jewry movement was such a popular movement? When Glenn Richter and Yaakov Birnbaum started the movement? I don't want to say anything bad about the establishment. Without the establishment, they would have never been the freedom of Soviet Jewry. But in the beginning, just a few people, mostly young people. You know why? Young people are naive. And some of the best things I've done in my life, I've done because I've been naive. And I didn't think it through with all the different processes, because had I thought it through, I would have never, ever done it. Soviet Jewry movement was a very, very lonely movement when it started. The Ethiopian Jewry movement, thank God for Grenin Berger of blessed memory. I remember in the late 70s when I was pretty much your age at a network convention in Toronto, and a leader of the State of Israel was there, and we asked about the falashas, not a very nice word. I won't say the name of the person whom everybody here knows, and the response was, falashas, malashas. Like, wow. But young people started that movement. And thank God we're seeing our black brothers and sisters here in Eretz Yisrael. It's lonely. It's lonely. Dr. Martin Luther King, you think he wasn't lonely? When he went to Montgomery and he wrote that letter from Montgomery, he wasn't only speaking to the white clergy. He was speaking to his black brothers and sisters, who said, Brother Martin, go home. You are a troublemaker. And I want to tell you, when someone in my activist days referred to me as a troublemaker, I wear it like a badge of honor. If Ahav could say to Eliyahu, Ocher Yisrael, you know, it's okay to be a troublemaker. That's what this principle is all about. The true, true leader is the one who stands up for something, not because it's the popular thing to do, but it is the right thing to do. And probably the most unpopular thing I ever did was 4 years ago when Sarah Horowitz was ordained as an Orthodox rabbi. You would think that I committed mass murder in the streets of New York. It was very, very lonely. Look at what Rabbi Soloveitchik says about lonely human being. He writes, why was it necessary to create lonely man? He's talking about Adam. Why did the world start with just Adam? Why was social human being not created at the very outset? Why not start the world with two people? Why start it with one? Take this home, read it over and over. The originality and creativity in man are rooted in his loneliness experience, not in his social awareness. Social man is superficial. He imitates. He emulates. Lonely man is profound. He creates. He is original. And this is what leadership is about. Ask the gurus of leadership. You know what they'll tell you leadership is? One word. Anybody know that word? Leadership is change. That's what they'll tell you. Leadership is change. But often, when one is engaged and changed, it's lonely. And when you call for change, there's tremendous resistance. Tremendous resistance. And the goal of the true leader then is to navigate the resistance and win the support of others. This is a very, very critical point, because the one who originates the movement cannot do it on his or her own. Ultimately, you need people to buy into it. Pardes, when it started, I assure you, was a dream on the fringe. But unless people like yourself bought into it, it could not be the success that it is today. That's what leadership is. Leadership is that call for change. It's the covenantal call for redemption, which is often a lonely cause. And I'm telling you, whenever you call for change, there's going to be resistance. People are going to push back. And the true leader is the one who can navigate that resistance and bring everyone along in the spirit of symphony. I remember after my first experience in the rabbinic pulpit in St. Louis, so they had a little going-away party. I was all of 24 years old. And there was a man who stood up, Saul Mirowitz of blessed memory. He was 42 then. I thought he was an old man. And he said, "Rabbi, I want to give you a l'chaim." I said, "What's the l'chaim?" He said, "I want to bless you, Rabbi. You should have many, many enemies." After the breakfast, I went up to him. I said, "Saul, you're my friend. What kind of blessing is that? You're blessing me with enemies." He said, "Rabbi," he said in his St. Louis, accent, "Rabbi, I want you to know that if you have no enemies, you know what it means? You haven't done a damn thing. I want to bless you. You should do something. You should have enemies." You know, from 1988 to 1998, I was Jonathan Pollard's rabbi. He asked me to serve as his rabbi, and I visited him in Marion for 5 years, the toughest prison in the country. It was in the K unit, the toughest unit of the prison. And in order to get to Marion, Illinois, the airport closest, about 130 miles away, was in St. Louis. I was stopping in St. Louis. I figured, I want to see my friend Saul Mirowitz. I call Saul. I say, "Saul, it's your old rabbi, and I'd like to sit down to have some coffee." And by then, he was already 62, 70 years old. And I sat down for coffee. I looked at him. He looked much younger to me, by the way, than 42 when he looked older. And he said to me, "Well, Rabbi, how are things going?" I said, "Saul, I want to tell you something. I have fulfilled your blessing 100%. I've got a whole slew of people who don't care for me." That's the third pillar. The third pillar is the real leader is you don't just get involved in causes you know you're going to win. That's simple. Can you get involved in a cause you're not so sure you're going to win? Are we ready to stand up not only for that which is popular, but that which is right? Which brings me to the fourth piece of leadership and activism. Most people identify Jewish activism with physical defense. You stand up against the Soviet Union and demand from those Soviet leaders, you demand, "Let my people go." It's physical defense. The ultimate activist here in Eretz Yisrael is Tzva Hagana Yisrael. I am now a military grandfather. We're here celebrating the bar mitzvah of our, Toby and I, my wife and I, of our grandson Noam, living in Efrat. Our daughter has 9 children, 7 boys, 2 girls. The first is coming out of the Egoz unit. Second is in the Air Force. Third wants to go into Sheldag. I'm now a military grandfather. I see the army from a whole different light. When our eldest was in Gaza, our eldest grandchild, it was the toughest month of my life. What a great, great army we have. Thank God, thank God. And activism is, and leadership is, you need an army to physically defend Am Yisrael. But I stand before you to tell you that speaking out and leadership is not only to make sure that Am Yisrael is physically strong. It is to make sure that Am Yisrael is spiritually inspired. And if I can speak about America for a moment, the greatest challenge facing American Jewry today is not anti-Semitism. It's not anti-Semitism. It's not the body of American Jewry that is in trouble as much as the soul. And a soul without a body can't function in this world, but a body without a soul is a body without meaning, without purpose, and without direction. A great teacher of mine, Rabbi Eliezer Berkowitz, used to quip during the Who is a Jew debate, he used to say, "Who is a Jew? One whose grandchildren are Jewish." And whenever I say this around America, people shudder because it's a very, very powerful statement. For many American Jews, their grandchildren are not or will not be Jewish. That's the challenge. And with all that's happening in Eretz Yisrael, and we need a strong army, and Ashreya Am Sheyesh Lo Tzava K'Tzva Hagana Yisrael, we need, with all of the issues, a moral army, a real purity of arms. And I think the Israeli army, of course there are aberrations, but does extraordinarily well in this area as well. War is so difficult. But even in Eretz Yisrael, I think the greater challenge, even greater than what's happening around us, is the spiritual challenge. Physical defense, leadership in physical defense is reactive. Stop the average Jew in America and ask them when they identify themselves as Jews. What I have found, most Jews identify themselves as Jews in America when they are fighting against anti-Semitism. I travel on campuses when, in fact, an anti-Semite is going to come to campus, then the Jews on campus are going to come out. But if I identify myself by what I'm fighting against, that is a negative Judaism. That is a reactive Judaism. And anything that is reactive will not endure. What's necessary is for that which is reactive to turn proactive. That's what spiritual leadership is all about. It's to light the fire. It's not only about what I'm fighting against, but what I am standing for. And I stand before you in the last few moments that I have with you to tell you that what I have found all over America, I have found this in Israel, I have found this all over the world. People are searching. I disagree with all those pundits who are writing that Jews are not searching for meaning, that they're not searching for God. I disagree. I think all people are searching. They're searching for meaning. Take a look at the last piece, number 4, written by Viktor Frankl, one of my favorite. Frankl, who wrote Man in Search for Meaning. So Frankl is wondering, he's asking, what makes people tick? What makes them tick? You ask Freud, what will Freud say? What makes people do what they do has something to do with our sexual cravings. You ask Adler, what makes people tick? People look for power, for glory. People look that they be acknowledged. Says Viktor Frankl, who survived the Shoah, who went through so much. Do you know what he says? What makes people tick is that people seek meaning. Let me explain why I've employed the term logotherapy as the name for my theory. Logos is a Greek word that denotes meaning. Logotherapy focuses on the meaning of human existence as well as man's search for such a meaning. According to logotherapy, the striving to find a meaning in one's life is the primary motivational force in man or woman. That is why I speak of a will to meaning in contrast to the pleasure principle on which Freudian psychoanalysis is centered, as well as in contrast to the will to power stressed by Adlerian psychology. People are seeking meaning. I believe that Jews are looking for some kind of balance between a tradition, a rooted Judaism, as long as it's not stagnant, and an open, fluid Judaism, as long as it has parameters. Yes, let me say that bad word, which I think is a glorious word. I think Jews are searching for God. And this is not, I'm an Orthodox rabbi, but I'm an open Orthodox rabbi. And my goal is, as an Orthodox rabbi, is to be a Rav for all Jews. My goal is not to convince people to be Orthodox. My goal is to light the fire. Light the fire and let people decide what path, which direction they wish to walk. That's the fourth principle of Jewish leadership. That we're not just talking about ADL leadership, very important. We're not just talking about B'nai B'rith leadership. I know all the leaders of those movements, Dan Mariashin, Abe Foxman, these are beautiful, wonderful people. But there's a desperate, desperate need for spiritual leadership. I have come before you to ask that you consider the following, that we have to create a new culture. And that culture is that the highest honor for a Jew is to spiritually serve Am Yisrael. We need doctors, we need lawyers, although I think we've got enough Jewish lawyers. We, above all, we need rabbis, women and men. We need teachers. That's what Pardes is all about. That's what your educational program is all about. I could stand before you, and I get the chills again when I say this to you, and talk about a Mark Baker who graduated your educational program here, goes up to Boston, he's changing the world. He's changing the world. And I want to bless you that you hear that. You hear this message of people who are searching, and Torah is such a glorious message. You're learning that Torah, and we're missing the medium of people who can transmit that Torah, not in a coercive way. That's why I've taken the stand that I've taken against the chief rabbinate. I'm not looking to undo the chief rabbinate. I just don't want it to be the only rabbinate in Israel. I think there should be a chief rabbinate for those who wish to identify with the chief rabbinate. And I think there should be a more open Orthodox rabbinate and a conservative rabbinate and a reform rabbinate. And I think people should be open to choose what they want. Any teacher of Judaism who is teaching spirituality through coercion, through kfiyat hadat, doesn't get it. It's good to be persuasive, but never, ever be coercive. Never. Reaching people where they're at, Bashehu Sham, we desperately, desperately need these kinds of leaders. And so, those are my four pieces that I wanted to share with you. Leadership, you've got to love the people that you're leading. No one can teach you that. Somebody can teach you how to learn a piece of Gemara, but either you have that love or don't. If you've got that love, see me later. It means you're a candidate. It means you should be here. You should be in the educational program. And if, yes, I want to try to convince you to think about it. To think about it, not only on a lay level, but to think about it. We desperately need such teachers. Believe in yourself. God doesn't make junk. God doesn't make junk. Stand up for what's right, not necessarily popular, but what's right. And remember that leadership is spiritual leadership as well. And I have seen it all over the country, in America especially. I have seen how one person, like a Mark Baker, can go into a community and make the whole difference. One person. Maimonides says that the world is like an evenly balanced scale. The next thing you do, the next person can shift the scales. You need help from others. You got to get that help. But every person can make that difference. My favorite activist story is the story of the Rebbe, who can answer any question. He'd go from place to place, whatever the question he could answer. Comes to this room, there's a little girl in the back of the room. She raises her hand and she says, "Rebbe, Rebbe, I have the question you can't answer." And she has in her hands a small, tiny, tiny bird. She says, "Rebbe, is this bird alive or is it dead?" And she figures, if he says the bird is alive, she'll kill it, close her hand. If he says it's dead, she'll open her hands and let it live. And the Rebbe hears the question and says, "Oh, wow, whatever I say, she'll do the opposite. This is the question I can't answer." And then the answer hits him, and he looks out and he says, "My precious, precious child, you hold in your hand a bird. You ask if this bird is alive or is it dead. I can only tell you one thing. The fate of this bird lies in your hands. You can let it live or you can let it die. And the bird for me is Am Yisrael. It's Kol Yoshvei Tevel. It's the whole world." I have had the zechut to be involved with young people, which I see Amir is sitting over here, Mamash looking around. I have seen individuals, young people, I have seen them go into communities. If they have that spark, if they have that spirit, going in and with God's help, changing the world. So I bless you and ask you to bless me that God keep instilling with us this quest for meaning. And there's no greater meaning, I would argue, I would add to Frankl, than giving. No greater meaning than giving of oneself in a humble way to another to create and to try to make a difference. I still have 7 minutes left, so I wanted to hear from you in the 7 minutes. If you have any thoughts, reflections, questions, I wanted to quickly say that if you're ever in New York, you're most welcome to come to Riverdale, spend the Shabbat with us, come to Marat or come to Chovevei Torah. I'm very, very proud of the relationship between our institutions, that we have openly sent students to Pardes and back and forth, because I really believe that our missions intersect. On that note, please. Yes, please. What's your name?
Melanie.
Yes, Melanie.
Rabbi, I'd like to ask, what can a person do when they find that the belief in themselves is lacking?
Wow. That's first of all, speak to, you know, I recognize that the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, speak to yourself. I don't mean to cut out on that question, but for me, that is such an individualized question. I think it would require sitting down one-on-one to try to understand why, in fact, that is the case. I don't mean to cut out on that question, but that question is deeper than an answer that I can offer in a generic way. You know, in the rabbinate, we spend so much time teaching people how to speak, when the key to the rabbinate, and I think the key to teaching, pardes and education, is knowing how to listen. So I can only tell you, as I said before, to drive home the point that there's something unique about every human being, something godly about every human being. I would try to listen and try to help whoever this individual may be to find that specialness. And I bless you that you should find it. Other questions I can't answer. Yes. What's your name?
Jeremy. You talk a lot about the notion of standing up for what's right versus what's popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's great. But how do we avoid running the risk of being wrong? Like, what if we're standing up for something and at a certain point we have this guttural reaction and we start screaming and saying no, 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 and then over time we're like, oh, well, actually, maybe I jumped the gun a little bit, or maybe it wasn't so.
I think you can only adopt this principle if you're ready to be wrong. You can't succeed unless you understand you could very well fail. Now, when you're involved in the endeavor, you really have to believe in self and believe in the endeavor and give it your all, and certainly your intent is not to fail. But if I am only going to enter into a venture that is so absolutely 100% is going to succeed, I will not begin any endeavor. I think it was Mars Cohen, a philosopher from City University, who once said, there is nothing wrong with trying and failing, but there's something wrong with failing to try. And all great leaders should be able to say, I've been wrong. I've made mistakes. And either you, within the same venture, correct that mistake, or you hop to another venture. I've been wrong so many times. It's critical, important, to look into the mirror and to make that recognition. I think one of the great leaders in biblical history is Yehuda. Yehuda's great moment was when he was confronted by Tamar. He says, Tzadka mimeni, she is right, I am wrong. That's a leader. That's a leader. Part of leadership is that I have to admit those times that I think it's a great question. But I think the challenge is to recognize that not everything we're going to try is going to be right. That shouldn't stop you from writing. It shouldn't stop you from trying. Yes, please. Your first name?
Jay.
I know Jay. I want everybody to know. Yes, Jay.
Rabbi Avi was my teacher at MTA in 1968. I came to see him again. Please let me ask a question. I live in Israel for
years,
and I believe 100% what you said, that coercion is not the way. Mm-hmm. Via Datit is not the way to bring Judaism to the Am Yisrael.
Yes.
But if there were no laws to say that I had to close businesses on Shabbos in Israel, that I'd have Shabbat with all the stores open.
Right.
There's some place where I believe what you say. On the other hand, what do I do?
Look, I think that there's meaning to living in a homogeneous community. I think there is meaning to that. But for me, real spiritual striving comes from living in a heterogeneous community. And I think, you know, it's counterintuitive, but if one wants stores to be closed on Shabbat, I think the best way is not to force anybody to close stores on Shabbat. I just don't think it's a healthy way. And I'm very, very proud that that's what our Bayit is all about. I firmly believe that religious growth and spiritual striving comes through choice, through openness. As an Orthodox rabbi, I say that the Orthodox community in Israel is making a terrible mistake by saying that Orthodoxy should be the only option. That if there would be options out there, I think it's going to make Orthodoxy more attractive, even as I think it will make other denominations more attractive as well. There was recently a good friend of mine, if I may, Phil Schneider. So he put together I'm leaving the Bet Knesset, I'm leaving the Bayit. So he put together something about his history in our synagogue. And you know what they say in America, the difference between an Orthodox synagogue and a conservative synagogue, they say, is two blocks. When he started coming to ask your friend what that means, but you know, when he started coming to the synagogue, so he would try to avoid me. This is the story he tells. And he came to 239th Street where there's a light. And the way he tells the story, I actually don't remember it, is that I saw him and I knocked on his window. He rolls down the window and I say, "Phil, good Shabbos." Give him a big hug. That's my rabbinate. I don't say this in a kind of way to, in a patronizing way. This is something I profoundly and deeply believe. My Orthodoxy is an open, inclusive, non-judgmental, pluralistic. That doesn't mean we agree with everyone, but it's a welcoming on every level. I saw one more hand and then we'll stop because it's almost 1 o'clock. Yes, you are? Yes.
What inspire you in educating and then ordaining female rabbis in that particular moment?
What inspired me was not a feminist agenda, even though I consider myself, I don't know if a man can consider himself a feminist, I consider myself in that movement, but that is not what inspired me. What inspired me is we desperately need spiritual leadership. And it didn't make any sense to me that we're tapping into leadership from only 50% of our population. Now, my background is I come from Haredi yeshivot, and there were many women along the way who opened my eyes and who made me understand what is so obvious, and that is that women, like men, can be extraordinary spiritual leaders. And women, like men, from my perspective, can receive smicha. My mother being the first, if I can invoke her name. My sister, Tova Reich, is considered one of the great novelists in America. She's a genius, genius writer. She inspired me. She's much smarter than me. She knows much more than I know. She recently finished her latest novel. She's a novelist, but she very sharp satire, and she knows Torah by heart. So just to give you a sense of how different our family is, the name of her most recent book, it's her feminist take on the Bible. Do you know what it's called? 100 Philistine Foreskins. That just gives you a sense of where we're coming from. Look it up. And it's, you know, she inspired me in a very deep way. In 1986, I suffered a heart attack during a Soviet jury demonstration. I was in a lot of trouble. So much trouble that they had to put a pump into my heart to make sure that I would make it from the angioplasty room to get quadruple heart surgery. And a woman doctor, Dr. Sharon Mazer, I want to mention her name, she saved me. And something went on in my head. Sharon Mazer can save me, and she can't serve. So where I come from, of course I want to check it out halachically. And after checking it halachically, and there are no impediments, no barriers, there's politics, no doubt, but there are no halachic barriers. Oh, that helped me. That's what inspired me. We have time for one more, one last one. Yes, and that's going to be it. Yes.
So you really emphasize spiritual activism.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you think the traditional Orthodox Yeshiva program emphasizes that as well, and also how the Yeshiva you founded emphasize that as one of the pillars.
I think all rabbinic programs should emphasize spiritual activism, and I don't use the term activism. I use the term spiritual activism, and I don't think we're the only ones. I think JTS does that. I think HUC does that, and Pardes absolutely does that. If it doesn't do it, it should be doing it, and everybody does it in their own unique way. It's been really just a delight, and I hope that our lives meet. And I offer the bracha, if there's one little thing that I said that maybe you'll remember, like tell your parents, don't love me so much, pick me up at the airport. It's been such a delight, and Daniel, thank you so much for the opportunity, and David, really, thank you so, so much. It's really been a delight. Thank you very much.